This is the In Focus podcast from The Hindu.
Hello and welcome to The Hindu's In Focus podcast with me, Amit Barua, your host for this episode. It's election time in India. The Modi government is touting India's strength abroad as one of its achievements. Earlier in April, Prime Minister Narendra Modi said at an election rally that India today kills terrorists in their own homes. Asked about a report in the Guardian newspaper that India had killed 20 alleged terrorists in recent years in Pakistan, Defense Minister Rajnath Singh said Delhi would pursue and kill terrorists in Pakistan if they staged attacks in India. In 2023, Canada accused Indian agents of being responsible for the murder of Sikh separatist leader Hardeep Singh Nijjar on its territory. So what does all this mean for India's foreign policy and standing in the world? Is this the right approach to adopt? What are the potential dangers of such actions sparking a wider conflict with Pakistan or create foreign policy fissures with other countries? To discuss these questions, I'm joined by Nirupama Subramanian, senior journalist and former correspondent of The Hindu in Pakistan. Welcome to the In Focus podcast, Nirupama.
Thank you so much, Amit. Thank you for having me on this podcast.
So Nirupama, what is your sense? You know, you've covered Pakistan extensively. You've followed issues in the rest of the neighborhood as well. What do you make of these comments coming both from Prime Minister Narendra Modi and Defense Minister Rajnath Singh?
Amit, as you rightly pointed out, it's election season. And during every election that we've had over the last 10 years, I think Pakistan has made some kind of entry in the campaign, the mention of Pakistan, I mean. And in this election, I think the Guardian story, its publication just, in the middle of the campaign has given the campaign a kind of unexpected Pakistan flavor. And you saw that both the Prime Minister and the Defense Minister said that we will pursue terrorists into their homes and kill them wherever they are. Now, when you set this off against foreign relations, when you look at this as two very important leaders in government were virtually talking about this as if it was a policy, I think there's a certain degree of, to my mind, it speaks of a certain degree of irresponsibility in the way you articulate these matters. And also the fact that there is a background to all this. Now, this is not coming out of the blue. The allegations in the Guardian report, which said that India had carried out so many killings inside Pakistan of people wanted for some terrorist actions or, of Sikh Khalistanis. This has a background because you mentioned as well that last year you had Canada accuse India of murdering a Khalistani on Canadian soil. And after that, very soon after that, you had the explosive revelation in a court document in the US in which the government was essentially saying, the US government was essentially saying that an Indian government official was involved in conspiring to kill another Khalistani activist in New York. So to make these statements and during an election campaign and think that they will be forgotten after the election by the countries that come up in such statements, I think is to be mistaken. I think that's a mistaken assumption.
Nirupama, I just want to ask you one thing here. You work both in Sri Lanka and in Pakistan, as a correspondent. And you do know, full well what kind of image India carries in its neighborhood, Do you think that such statements help, in sort of adding to this image that India has in its neighborhood?
Yeah, I mean, definitely India has a negative image in most of its neighborhood. I think except in Afghanistan, in the entire South Asian neighborhood, India's image is that of a big brother who's trying to trample upon their economies or upon their polities or whatever. Even though we have helped many of these countries in very substantial ways, that feeling is there. Now, when somebody is openly saying that Rajnath Singh seemed to confirm the Guardian report, really, when he said that when he was asked, and he did not deny the report.
Specifically asked, actually, about the Guardian report.
He was specifically asked, he did not deny it, and he said, "Hum ghar mein ghuske marenge." So it was as if he was almost confirming that report. So there is going to be some ripple effect of all this in the sense of how people in those countries view India. As far as policy is concerned, I won't rush to make a conclusive statement here, because Pakistan has not really responded. You may recall that even last year, a similar report had come out in The Intercept. The Intercept is an investigative online portal, and there was a very detailed report about how RNDWs has been carrying out these killings inside Pakistan and linking them to the Niger killing and to all that was happening. There was a death of a Khalistani activist also in the UK, so they were linking that too. But there was no whisper from the Pakistani establishment, the government. You can say, okay, the last government, there was a bit of they were in a bad place. It was unstable. An election was coming up. Nobody knew whether there was going to be an election. So maybe they were preoccupied with all that. But they haven't really responded to Rajnath Singh's statement at this time either. So I would hesitate to say that this will have some effect on any long-term policy that both countries may be looking at the moment after the Indian elections. I'm saying this because a Sharif government is supposed to be, partial to repairing relations with India. So they are holding their horses on the Pakistani side. Maybe they think, okay, this is election rhetoric, and we should wait to see, A, what a new government is going to look like, and B, what that government's policy is. So I think there is, on the Pakistani side, an acknowledgement that this is election rhetoric, and let us not take it any further. There was a statement from ISPR, I think, or the foreign ministry spokesman, correct me, saying that, condemning Rajnath Singh's statement, but that was all. It has not been taken up at a higher level, at a wider level.
Before I just now want to broaden our discussion into, the ethics of what India has been claiming or it's doing, including what's happened in Canada and the botched assassination attempt, as it were, in New York. I just want to remind you, Nirupama, before we go ahead, that in 1998, the BJP manifesto contained a provision that, a promise that we will turn India into a nuclear power. And if you see the statements of that time, the only country that took, the rhetoric seriously was Pakistan. And its foreign office spokesman repeatedly warned that, it's India is going to go nuclear post this election. And that's exactly what happened. So these two are countries, we understand each other well. But I'm not going to dwell on that. What I'm going to ask you is, as we see what's happening in the rest of the world, we are seeing what Israel has been doing, targeted assassinations, targeted killings. We also know that India today is very close to Israel in some ways, in its thinking, in its approach. As an ethical practice, what is your sense of a country like India engaging or, claiming to engage in targeted assassinations?
So, there are two things here. One is what appears in public, and one is what goes on behind the scenes. I think all intelligence agencies at one time or the other, or at all times, depending upon their capabilities, do covert operations. Now, these covert operations can extend to a broad range. They can be just interactions with, people in that country, or a quiet watch on some people of interest to that particular intelligence agency, or, to the other end of the spectrum, targeted killings. Now, we know that during the Cold War, this is quite routine. People from one side or the other were carrying out targeted killings of their dissidents, their spies, and so on. And Israel has, of course, made it into a kind of calling card that it goes after its enemies and, you know, brings them home, drags them by the collar, literally, and brings them home and then does what it has, what it does with them either in Israel or, you know, they also known to have carried out killings abroad. Now, India does not have that record. But of late, when you've seen these mysterious killings of people that are of interest to India, meaning they have carried out, they're alleged to have carried out terrorist attacks in India and all that, and they are dying like flies in Pakistan. Now, Pakistan has been screaming about India carrying out terrorist activities on its soil, but nobody has taken it seriously because, you know, Pakistan has an image of a country where there are terrorists, where terrorists roam, and that India has, you know, attempted to take out somebody and never made big news. You may recall that 2 years back in December 22, the then foreign minister of Pakistan, Hina Rabbani Khar, said that India had, she distributed dossiers at a meeting, at an international meeting in Europe, saying maybe it was a Munich Security Conference, that, you know, these are the dossiers, this is our information about what India has done. And Jaishankar responded, in response, Jaishankar said, there are snakes in your backyard, you have to clean up your act, you are the people who have carried out terrorist attacks, and, you know, so don't accuse us, we know who the terrorist state is, so don't talk to us like that. So it went down very well. But on social media in India, this action of, I mean, this perceived activity by India, this perceived, if you want to call it that, machismo, or that is what it's being looked at on social media, is winning the government a lot of points, winning Narendra Modi, Mr. Doval, Mr. Jaishankar, a lot of points on Indian social media, saying, okay, we have become Israel now. We are the new strong nation. We go after our enemies wherever they are. And, you know, whenever you heard of a Khalistani being killed or dying, say for instance, in UK, a Khalistani died. Now, there's some doubt about how he died, whether he was poisoned or he died of a pre-existing illness. But as soon as he died, and as soon as Nijjar died, there was, you know, the social media heated up, saying, you know, now these are the people who should watch out for their lives because we are coming for you. And this is the kind of ecosystem that exists in India on, you know, which believes that this is the right thing to do. But the world doesn't work like that. So as long as you were doing it against, or you were perceived to be doing it against Pakistan, or Pakistan was alleging that you were doing it on their soil, nobody bothered. Hina Rabbani Khar's dossiers, I don't know where, who she distributed it to or where they went, nobody took note. But when it started happening in Canada and when the US found evidence of this, then it became a serious issue. Now what Pakistan hopes and what might come out of that Guardian report is that Pakistan will use the Nijjar case and the US case to piggyback their own complaints, basically, because earlier they were not taken seriously when they were telling the world, this is what India is doing to us. And now they probably hope that they have a better chance of putting India in a corner about the killings on its territory. But again, I'd like to point out that, you know, it's a curious thing that the Pakistani army or, you know, the military, which is usually, you know, which we say is behind the terrorist infrastructure that attacks India, that launches attacks in Kashmir, they have not really acknowledged any of these killings at all. They've been very quiet about them. They have not said that these people were taken out, they've not condemned it. They've been very quiet.
So in some senses, this could suit Pakistan also because, you know, they have a number of people hanging around who are responsible for various offenses in different countries. But, you know, that's a matter of speculation. What I want to ask you, Nirupama, you know, as you rightly said, that intelligence agencies have been engaged in covert operations, from the time they existed. And some would argue that, it is really the job to do so. But claiming responsibility is another thing. And, my mind also goes back, to the war in Kargil, when India recorded a conversation between General Musharraf in Beijing and his chief of staff in Islamabad or Rawalpindi, Aziz Khan. And what was interesting is that they chose to make it public. And at that time, George Fernandes was the defense minister. And there was a lot of debate in India, whether we should have actually, made the contents of this conversation public. Because the whole notion was that, should you display a capability or should you expose a capability your intelligence agencies possess? So the question that I'm asking you is that, Let's hypothetically, believe that, India or Indian agents are responsible for killings of people like Paramjit Singh Pajwar or, one of the terrorists involved in the IC-814 hijack. Even suppose it had been done, was it necessary for India to claim responsibility?
So India has not formally claimed responsibility.
Yes.
But it has, but definitely the defense
at least.
Has indicated. So this is something dangerous, and I think that's a no-go territory as far as anyone would acknowledge. I mean everybody would say this, I think, across the board. But there is a sense of recklessness I have noticed, Amit, amongst our politicians, especially in the BJP, to say things that impinge on our relations with other countries. You may recall how Amit Shah called Bangladeshi immigrants termites. Then recently you will see how both the Prime Minister and the Foreign Minister raked up the Kachativa issue. Now Rajnath Singh seeming to admit to killing people on Pakistani soil. But there is a certain recklessness that they can, and a kind of overconfidence that they can get away with it, because they are probably going by what I said earlier, that the other side understands that this is election rhetoric, and we have to carry on. I mean, there are foreign policy is a bigger thing than election rhetoric. So let us move on. So I don't know where this recklessness is coming from, but this could be one reason. And I can only hope that it will not be used on the other side, because we tend to forget that there are politicians on the other side. They also face elections. In Sri Lanka also, they are going to be elections now. And in Pakistan also, there'll be elections again. There'll be another round of elections at some point. And, these things have a habit of coming back into play at that time. And then, you have the Indian media screaming that there is anti-India rhetoric in, the Maldives or in Pakistan or in Sri Lanka. So I think the more careful we are about our politicians are about the kind of things that they say in public, the kind of claims they make, true or false, I think India has to be really careful about what it says in public or what Indian politicians say in public.
So turning to the Niger case now, and whatever the Canadian Prime Minister said, he basically made some allegations that there could be possible links to Indian agents. And now we know that an Indian national is awaiting extradition in the case where there was a planned assassination in the United States. What is your sense? Once this matter goes to court, will a lot of other things come to light?
Yeah, they could. But I also think that, the U.S. sees its relations with India in a broader light. But it all depends on what they want to do with this case. Do they want to punish India in some way? And therefore, will they allow more revelations to come out? Because I'm sure they have put so much information in that court document. I'm sure that they have lots more information. And the person they are holding and they have interrogated must have given more information. So it's not as if they have to go looking for the information, or that they are waiting for some investigation to take place from the Indian side. I think they know what there is to be known. Now, whether they make it public or whether they choose not to will depend upon how they read their relations with India in the coming months. What is the give and take behind the scenes, and their larger vision of India, of their relations with India? Because finally, Amit, also if you see during the Cold War, the US and Britain were far closer than, they were really close, right? They were completely aligned. But their security relations were full of tensions. They got over it because they thought, okay, they need to hang together because for the larger cause of the Cold War at that time. So I would say that right now, China being the bad boy that China is for the whole world, and the US sense of India as a counterweight in this region, there might be some reckoning that, that we should go this far with this case and no further.
But this matter is now before a court of law. I mean, it's no longer the sole prerogative of the US government. So it would also depend on how the US judiciary performs on this one.
Yeah, true. Absolutely. Absolutely. So we have to really see how much then, becomes also, some things could become classified. One doesn't know really how this will pan out. Not assume that then...
Before I let you go, this one thing which, I wanted to ask you, and which is the following. Say 10, 15 years, 20 years ago, there was some pressure on the human rights front internationally, what you do, what you don't do. Say in Jammu and Kashmir or the Northeast, India's record was, criticized by countries like the United States, other Western governments and all. And today, as you rightly point out, India's relationship with the United States, is very important and is improving. So is this your sense that, in government of India now feels that, its relations with the Western world are so good, purchase of big military infrastructure, big, weapon systems, all that, in a sense, has given India a free pass to engage or perhaps claim to engage in such activities?
I would say not. I think there is a clear sense of where whatever the government says to its people in the country, that our relations are great and India is now this colossus on the world stage. I think the people in power, people who are ruling this country, know exactly where those relations are. So, they would have an accurate sense of what is really going on in those relations, why the West needs India, what is India's exact role in the world must be very clear to all those people who are in charge of foreign policy and in charge of running this country. But the fact is that there isn't I wouldn't call it a free pass, but the fact that the US has been willing to overlook many what would have been at another time transgressions. For instance, the whole 370 abrogation in Kashmir has given a sense to India that the West cannot do without it for the moment. So I think there is that kind of confidence that we can try and get away with what we can at this point. But I don't think there is an exaggerated sense of the relationship within the government. I think people in the government know where exactly those relations are. I don't know if that answers your question, Amit.
Yeah, but I'd like to also ask you one other thing, Nirupama, before we wrap this up. You pointed to the fact that the Pakistanis haven't reacted in the way they usually react to, these allegations and claims by India. But over the past few years, we've really seen there's almost no contact between India and Pakistan. There are no trade, there are no flights, there are no buses, there are no trains. In a sense, what we've seen in the last 8 to 10 years is almost a policy of nothingness, We don't have high commissioners. Recently, Pakistan celebrated its National Day, but the government, you know, in its wisdom, didn't even send a junior level officer for the National Day celebrations. But they chose to send an official to Afghanistan to engage with the Taliban. But that's a separate point. What I'm trying to ask you is that, do you see any kind of engagement happening between India and Pakistan after these elections are over in India?
There is definitely an anticipation that there will be some engagement after the Indian elections. Also because, you know, the Pakistani economy being in the shape that it is, and the firm belief in the present government in Pakistan, that which has always been a Sharif policy, that, you know, we should have economic relations with India. So there is an anticipation that after India's elections, there could be a forward movement. Also, Amit, let's not forget that the ceasefire along the LOC, despite there being a complete, as you described it, everything else is a complete zero, but the ceasefire on the LOC is holding after both the militaries reaffirmed their commitment to it in 2021. So that is a good sign. And at that time, it was thought that, you know, things would move forward. But unfortunately, they didn't, for one reason or the other. And the fact that both sides believe that the ceasefire is important is, I think, important, is a good stepping stone for expanding things further, expanding relations further. And I believe this might just start with some trade exchanges. For instance, there was a time when the Imran Khan government wanted to open the border for limited trade. I think it was cotton and onions, or cotton and sugar, I think. But it came a cropper because of political opposition. Now, at this point, with Shahbaz Sharif in power and Nawaz Sharif as a kind of, you know, advisor to the government, there could be a sense that, you know, let's restart trade with India. And I think if that happens from the Indian side, there will be a positive response, because even in Amritsar, there is a great demand for restarting this trade, because there are lots of livelihoods in Amritsar were dependent on this cross-border trade. Truckers, porters, then all kinds of agents, you know, who were sending things across. There is some pressure in that particular area, especially for border trade to begin. So I think it could happen.
Well, let's see what happens in the next few weeks and months. But for the moment, maybe remind listeners of the In Focus podcast that India is in election mode, and a health warning of more rhetoric coming from the government is in order. Thank you so much, Nirupama Subramanian, for patiently answering all my questions. I look forward to speaking to you again on our podcast.
Thank you so much, Amit. Thank you for having me on this show.
In Focus will be back soon with analysis of the biggest news issues. In the meantime, you can find our podcast on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, and other platforms. Just search for In Focus by The Hindu. We'll see you soon.